And thanks for joining us on another edition of Ask the Experts. This hour, from the CCLR at the School of Optometry and Vision Science at University of Waterloo, I welcome Dr. Lyndon Jones, who is the director. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for the invitation.
This is the second Jones we've had on in 2 weeks, and I believe there's a connection, actually.
Yeah. I'm married to the other one that you had on last
time. Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. Let's learn a little bit more about you before we get into today's show. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to be at the CCLR?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a professor at the School of Optometry, so I'm on faculty there. I'm also director of the Center for Contact Lens Research. Center for Contact Lens Research really runs a whole series of clinical studies. It's been around since the late 1980s. When it started off, we were really just doing a clinical comparison of various contact lenses, contact lens solutions, that kind of thing. I joined in 1998 from the UK. I'm an optometrist by background, but I did a PhD in chemical engineering looking at developing new contact lens materials. So when a position came up at the center to open up some new laboratory space, myself and my wife moved over from the UK to Kitchener-Waterloo.
Well, very good. Glad you did. And for people who always want to know the credentials, we do call it Ask the Experts. Dr. Jones has authored over 300 papers, a textbook.
Yeah.
Wow. How do you go about writing a textbook?
You work really nicely with your wife. That was actually also authored by my wife, and it was really her fault, not mine.
All right. We'll blame her then. Of course, he's also given over 650 invited lectures at conferences worldwide in over 30 countries. Bit of travel in there as well.
Yeah, that's right. You do end up, the job that I get, you do end up putting up those air miles for sure.
So the CCLR stands for the Center for Contact Lens Research. Do you only do contact lens research?
No, that's a very good point, actually. So in 1988, when the center started, it really was only doing contact lens research. Really, over the last 10 to 12 years, it's expanded its mandate significantly. We now do a significant amount of a very basic research. So we do research involving looking at how cells interact with various contact lens solutions, various contact lens materials. So we do very, very basic research. We also try to understand how contact lens materials interact with the surface of your eye. So we look at things like how the tear film interacts with it and how various inflammatory things in your tears respond to various contact lens materials, as well as still doing straight clinical trials comparing lens A against lens B. So it isn't just contact lens studies. We do lots of dry eye studies and basic research as well.
Okay, as a contact lens wearer, I just want to ask, is there really a difference between contact lens solutions?
Yeah, there really is, actually. So probably my first contact lens solution study was actually done in 1986. And at that time, actually trying to find a difference between contact lens solutions was almost impossible. You could try and design the best experiment possible. It was really tough to tell differences. Now there really are differences. These contact lens bottles that you buy are extremely, extremely complex chemistries in these bottles. And because of how different contact lens materials are these days, certain contact lens materials and certain contact lens solutions actually work better together. So if ever your optometrist or your contact lens practitioner does recommend to you that you should purchase a particular contact lens solution, you really should stick with that solution and not just, you know, go along to the local pharmacy or the local drugstore and just end up buying something because it's on sale. You really should check in with your practitioner, because it may well be that that contact lens solution actually doesn't work that well for you, or indeed with the lens material that you're wearing.
Now, you did touch on some of the other studies that you do at the CCLR. Now, what sorts of current studies are you looking for research subjects for?
So a whole gamut of studies, through from studies where people who are not current contact lens wearers would be of interest to us, through to patients who are suffering from dryness and discomfort with their contact lenses. We're looking for young patients, so children. That was what my wife was talking about a couple of weeks ago, was looking at how we can stop the development of short-sightedness using some new contact lens designs. And also even looking at people who are not contact lens wearers but who take things like glaucoma drops. We're very interested at the moment in people who suffer from glaucoma. Very often these people, when they take their drops, end up developing very dry eyes. And so we're looking at a new dry eye product to be used in glaucoma patients. So really a whole host of studies.
And we'll be talking about that more as the hour goes on.
Sure.
How do people contact the CCLR to participate in the study?
So there's a number of different ways. They can either call us. So our telephone number is 519-888-4539. Again, that's 519-888-4539. That'll take you through to our recruitment team. They can go online to register. So they, if we have no current studies, but they're interested in participating in studies when something potential comes up, they can go online to the cclr.ca, or they can email. We have an email into our recruitment specialist, Amanda McIntosh, and she's available at a3mcinto@yourwaterloo.ca. So there's plenty of ways that they can get hold of us.
Why would someone want to be part of this? How do they benefit from being in a study at the university?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, some of the reasons are that it just gives them a real opportunity to be able to participate in wearing brand new products. So we're continuously working with all of the major developers of contact lens materials, contact lens solutions, contact lens designs. So it gives them an opportunity to try products that are not yet out on the market. For some people, they come out of these studies going, hey, that's incredible. That's unbelievable. And that's worked so well with me. I've never felt such great comfort, or I've never seen so well. And then when those products do come to market, we're able to inform them of the fact that it's out there. It also gives them an opportunity to participate in research projects. We have 16 graduate students that we work with, and some people are, you know, really happy to be able to work with these students on the projects that they're working on. And so there are many potential benefits to participating in a project, not the least of which is that during the time that you're participating in these projects, you actually get free products, so you don't have to pay for the solutions or the lenses, and you even get paid for participating as well. So there's some financial benefit too.
Wow. I'm thinking maybe I should sign up. This sounds good.
We'll book you in a heartbeat.
Now, any kind of university study, generally, I mean, there's got to be some sort of review board or an ethics committee or something. Are your studies reviewed by an ethics committee?
Every single one. So we are not permitted to undertake any studies that haven't gone through a very rigorous and thorough ethics review. So those review boards have specialists on them as well as lay people, so they can ensure that the people who are participating are very aware of the potential benefits and the risks, because there are some risks to wearing contact lenses over and above wearing spectacles. So it's important that we point out those risks in the informed consent letter. So they're all reviewed by ethics review boards. When people come in, there is a very detailed letter detailing exactly what's involved, and we're not allowed for people to go ahead without signing that and making sure that they understand what's going on.
Now, you did touch on this a minute ago when you talked about the glaucoma study. So you don't have to be a contact lens wearer to be in a study?
Not at all. We have a significant number of projects going on looking at developing dry eye therapies. So people who don't wear contact lenses still suffer from dry eye. It's estimated that about 25% of the population will at some point in their life have some dry eye. Dry eye is more prevalent in older individuals, so once you get to 50 and older. And actually, the most prominent group that suffer from dry eye are actually postmenopausal women. Something like 50% of postmenopausal women will suffer from symptoms of dry eye. And so we're very involved with companies who develop products to try to manage that. Some of them are drops, some of them are other forms of management. And so you don't have to be a contact lens wearer to be a participant in our studies, no.
You know, when you talk to people, you say, have you ever tried contact lenses before? And they say no. There's usually two reasons. It's, I can't touch my eye.
Yep.
Or, I tried them and they just weren't comfortable. I couldn't get used to them. So I understand you're actually looking for volunteers for studies looking at contact lens comfort.
Yeah, that's still the number one area of study with contact lenses. So I've mentioned that about 25% of the regular population who are non-lens wearers complain of dry eye. That doubles in contact lens wearers. So something like 50% of all people who wear contact lenses will be aware of reduced comfort with their lenses, particularly towards the end of the day. So typically after about 10 or 11 hours, people start complaining that their lenses feel dry in their eye. And so for the contact lens industry, that's a huge challenge, because there is a significant, there's millions of people who committed to wearing lenses, weren't able to get the comfort that they wanted, so stopped wearing lenses. So that's a big challenge, and probably our biggest area of study altogether, actually, is looking at trying to solve that end-of-day dryness and discomfort issue. So if any of your listeners out there suffer from dryness and discomfort, we're very, very interested in them contacting us so they can participate in these studies, so we can try and solve, well, I guess two things. One, understand why that dryness is happening, and then secondly, hopefully try and come up with reasons to be able to solve it.
All right. We'll continue our discussion on that, and also a little bit more about the glaucoma study that's going on right now. My guest, Dr. Lyndon Jones, director of the CCLR, the School of Optometry and Vision Science at the University of Waterloo. If you'd like to get in touch with them, register for a study, call 519-888-4539. You can learn more online as well at cclr.com. ask.ca. We'll take a short break, then we'll be back with more of Ask the Experts here on 570 News. Thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Lyndon Jones, the director of the CCLR, the School of Optometry and Vision Science at the University of Waterloo, is my guest this hour, online at cclr.ca. That's a mouthful. I nearly lost my breath. And if you're just joining us, we're talking today about some of the studies that you quite possibly could participate in up at the Center for Contact Lens Research. And as we were saying before the break, right now you're looking at studies with people who've got dry eyes. That's what you're hoping for.
Yeah, that's right. So we do a lot of studies working with the contact lens industry and the industry who develop new contact lens and new dry eye drug management. So we're looking for participants who are contact lens wearers and non-contact lens wearers who have dry eyes. And the ability that people have to be able to use these products over a period of time, we follow them very carefully, and hopefully, if these products come to market, people will be able to use them when they come out.
Now, if anyone who was listening during the week probably heard your promo and said, they're going to talk about glaucoma. It is kind of surprising to hear that you need people who are suffering from glaucoma and take drops. Can you tell us more about that study?
Yeah, sure. So glaucoma is a relatively common condition in which the pressure inside your eye elevates over a period of time. And so when you go to your optometrist and they measure the pressure inside your eye, if it goes above a certain number, then you need to take drops to reduce that pressure. Otherwise, it causes damage to the back of your eye. And so over the number of years that people take these drops, there are preservatives in these drops which effectively dry your eye out. And when we look at people who've been taking glaucoma drugs for 10 years or more, very often we find that these people have pretty uncomfortable eyes. They often have very red eyes, very dry eyes, very sore eyes, primarily due to the preservatives that they've instilled into their eyes over that number of years. So we're now looking for patients who've been taking glaucoma drops for a number of years, particularly those who suffer from dryness, and we're looking at being able to use a concurrent use of a different type of drop which would make their glaucoma drops more comfortable and make their eyes more comfortable. So we're particularly looking for glaucoma sufferers who have dry eyes expose them to a new type of drop to hopefully make their eyes feel better.
So you're not replacing the drop, you're adding an extra drop.
That's exactly right. So we would never interfere with their glaucoma medication. That's very important because very often these patients have taken many years in order to be able to find the appropriate glaucoma drug that controls their glaucoma. So we don't want to interfere with that. What we want to do is to be able to make that drop, or make that drug rather, work better by using another in-eye rewetting drop or a comfort drop, which makes their eyes feel better. So no, we would never interfere with their glaucoma medication. That's very important for listeners to be aware of.
So tell us a bit about your selection criteria. Can any glaucoma patient become part of the study, or are you looking for specific patients?
No. Any patient who has current glaucoma who takes drops can come in to be screened. Now, there are certain things that we look for when people come in. So when they come in, they will be given a very detailed outline of what the study is, what it involves, what it requires. And so once they understand that, they sign this informed consent letter, and then we look at their eyes. So we do a very, very detailed examination of the outer surface of their eye. There are certain things that we're looking for in terms of the amount of dryness that they show. And if they pass that criteria, then we enter them into the study and they get given the study product that they will use in conjunction with their glaucoma drops.
How long will the study be running?
This is running for a number of months, so depending upon the how they do with it, but it's usually about 3 months that they'll be involved in this study. And during the period of the study, they will be reimbursed for their travel, reimbursed for their parking, and also reimbursed for their time. So there is actually payment for being a participant in this study. And that's why, of course, it's very important that an ethics review board review this, because it could be seen that we're inducing people to come into this study just so they can be paid. And so that's very important.
Obviously, when you undertake any scientific study, you're not sure what the outcome's going to be, but what are you hoping to find?
Well, what we're hoping to find is that these rewetting drops or these comfort drops actually make the people's eyes feel better. So very often, of course, the problem with any sort of study like this is that you give a patient a drop, you tell them it should make their eyes feel better, they say, yeah, my eyes feel better. So it's very important that when we design these studies, that we design studies in which often we give them what's called a placebo. So this is a drop which has none of the active ingredients in it, such that they are instilling something into their eye. And we'll look at the people receiving the placebo drop, people receiving the other active drug, and see if it really makes a difference. Because, again, it's very difficult sometimes for patients to not want to tell you what they think you want to hear. Mm-hmm. And so with any type of study, we try to take out that potential bias.
Do you ever have people go, I don't want to be in the placebo group, put me in the good group?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and that's really hard because, of course, it's completely randomized. Basically, when you get entered into any sort of study, you really shouldn't know which group you're going into. And very often people say, well, you know, am I in the placebo group or not? Because if I am, then I don't want to continue. And, of course, that doesn't help us at all. So we try again to prevent that by doing things like over-labeling the drops that they get given and making sure that they really don't know.
So now, you do other studies as well, and another term that I have heard before is presbyopia. Now, did I say that right?
You did. Good job.
Yay.
Good job. And it's a long word and everything.
It is indeed. I'm good with the big words. But what does it actually mean?
Presbyopia is sad. It's really sad. It basically means old age eye. So basically, I'm sure many of your listeners got to the age of somewhere between 40 and 50, usually around 45, 46, 47. What they find is that when they start to look at things up close, so when they're reading the newspaper or going out for dinner and trying to read the menu, all of a sudden they start having to push the things further and further and further away from their eyes. And eventually their arms are not long enough anymore, and that's when they need reading specs. So presbyopia is basically a condition that hits everybody. I mean, every single person in the world, if you live long enough, you're going to get presbyopia, and it just means that your eyes are no longer strong enough to be able to focus for up close. It's blurry vision at near.
So you're telling me that's why I have to pull my glasses down to the end of my nose to read a book?
Sad but true. Sad but true, yeah.
Darn it, I'm only 29. do you ever conduct studies on presbyopia?
We do, and again, presbyopia is one of the things that, because it's something that gets everybody, then all of the contact lens industry are very, very interested in trying to develop contact lenses for presbyopia that really do help you see in the distance, clear, and up close. And it's really hard trying to design. You know, you've got a very, very small piece of plastic, which has got two positions of focus on it, one for distance and one for up close. So they're really, really hard to design. But I don't know if any of your listeners have potentially ever tried contact lenses for presbyopia. Maybe they tried it 10 or 12 years ago and failed. When I graduated back in the mid-80s, trying to fit lenses for presbyopia was a nightmare. I would try and do anything possible to try and to avoid fitting those kind of lenses because they really didn't work very well. Nowadays, we have such incredibly sophisticated designs that most people that we try to fit with a presbyopic contact lens, we will be able to fit in some way or another. So much of our work is trying to really enhance these lenses now, not just so that they work, but they work really well and as well as spectacles.
So this is a foregone conclusion, or can presbyopia be prevented?
Well, at the moment, it can't be prevented. There are lots of research, very basic research studies going, actually mainly animal studies, looking at trying to prevent presbyopia occurring. But so far at the moment, no, not at all. It's not avoidable at the moment. I think probably in my lifetime it's not going to be possible.
So what's the best way to manage it? Are contact lenses one of the best ways?
Contact lenses certainly work very well. Basically you've got three options of ways of people for dealing with their presbyopia. One is to have reading spectacles. So if you need a distance spectacle correction, then you have the top of the lens is your distance correction, the bottom is near correction. So that can either be in bifocals or now in multifocals. So that's one option that works very well. Another option, if you go into contact lenses, is to have contact lenses for distance, and you put a pair of reading spectacles over the top. That's really inconvenient. You know, you've got to reach around and try to find your reading spectacles all the time, so that doesn't work so well. Another option that sounds completely crazy is a thing called monovision. And monovision is where you correct one eye for long distance, one eye for up close, and your brain, when you're looking in the distance, it selectively chooses the image that's in focus from one eye. And then when you look up close, you pick up a newspaper or something, then it selectively uses the other image. So your brain's really clever at being able to look at deciding which of those images it wants to use. And then the third option for contact lens wearers are these presbyopic contact lens options that I say now are really very good. But we're certainly very interested in people who are interested in trying presbyopic contact lenses. Again, to contact us to be a member and participate in one of our studies.
Okay. Well, we'll hold that thought because I want to ask more about the presbyopic contact lenses. When we come back, we do have to take a short break. My guest is Dr. Lyndon Jones, director of the CCLR, the School of Optometry and Vision Science, at the University of Waterloo. Get online to learn more at cclr.ca or call to learn if whether or not you should be in one of their studies at 519-888-4539. Ask the Experts returns in just a couple of minutes here on 570 News. On the show today, from the CCLR, the Center for Contact Lens Research at the School of Optometry and Vision Science at the University of Waterloo, we welcome the director, Dr. Lyndon Jones. Thanks for being on the show with us today.
Welcome. Thanks very much for the invitation.
Now, before the break, we were talking about contact lenses for people with presbyopia. What makes these lenses special? How do they work for people?
Well, there are a couple of different ways. So the majority of them now actually have two sections. So they're made almost, if you imagine, circles around each other. The outer circle can either be a distance prescription or a near prescription. And then the center portion is the reverse of that. So usually what happens is that you end up looking through the contact lens, and depending upon the size of your pupil, that dictates how much light from the distance portion or how much light from the near portion gets focused at the back of your eye. Your brain then looks at those two images, and it very selectively decides which one to process, and so you end up seeing in the distance clear and up close.
So I guess it's kind of like a bifocal in a contact lens, or is that accurate?
That's very true, actually, Dave. So it's not quite as easy to make it in a contact lens because with a spectacle lens, of course, the lens is fixed all the time. So you've got your nose and your ears that make the spectacle not move. But with a contact lens, every time you move your eye, of course, the contact lens follows your eye. So it's a little bit more complicated from an optical principle. But now with the kind of manufacturing principles that we have, you can make very reproducible, extremely high-quality optical contact lenses that really work very well.
Well, that's good to know as well, then. Now, the world of contact lenses is, I guess, just not about seeing better. People sometimes use them as fashion accessories as well.
They do indeed.
There's this whole thing now with the Lady Gaga-type lenses that make your eyes look bigger than they really are. And you're actually doing a study about those as well. What does that study involve?
Yeah, that's a very interesting study, actually. So this is a lens that's not yet actually available in North America. So it's been available in the Far East, so out in Japan and China for a number of years now, probably 4 or 5 years. And it's huge. So people who come in who have relatively small eyes put these cosmetic contact lenses on their eye, and it effectively makes their eyes look much bigger. So, of course, if you've got small eye, that's perfect. It's a fantastic fashion accessory. The lenses are very comfortable, so they're as comfortable as normal lenses, but they change the appearance of your eye. The equivalent over here would be lenses that change the color of your eye, and they've been around for many, many years. But these particular ones are very unique because they make your eyes look bigger. We're interested in studying these lenses to see whether, because they've got this particular type of tint on them, whether it changes the amount of oxygen that gets to your eye and whether that has any effect on your eye at all. So the study that we're doing at the moment, which will be starting in the new year, will be to take these contact lenses, put them on patients' eyes, measure them over the course of the day and see if there's any impact in terms of whether they reduce oxygen to your eye. We're not expecting that will be a problem at all, but in order for them to get a license for North America, we have to have that data. So we're working with a sponsor to be able to get that data to show just how safe these lenses are.
Now, as you said, right now, Asia is the primary market for these type of lenses. Does that mean that your study is looking for mainly Asian volunteers?
We are, yes. So for that particular study, it's a fairly unique recruitment criteria. We're actually looking for Asian eyes. There is some work that shows that the Asian eye is slightly different in terms of its physiology and slightly different in terms of the way that its tear film interacts with contact lenses. So for that particular study, we're looking for Asian volunteers only to wear those lenses.
Okay. Well, then if you're an Asian volunteer and you've always wanted to look like Lady Gaga, then 519-888-4539. As we mentioned earlier in the show, and it's good to recap it for people who just joined us, some of our listeners really have comfort issues with their contact lenses. And as you said, that's why some people just go, I'm not wearing them anymore. How common is having discomfort with lenses?
It's very common. Something in the region of 50% of all people who wear contact lenses will, towards the end of the day, complain of dryness and discomfort. And it's, you know, it's been like that really for many, many years. So the contact lens industry has developed lots of new contact lens solutions, contact lens materials to try and prevent that. And we've certainly moved the needle. We're certainly now looking at people being able to wear their lenses for a longer period of time and retain comfort. But we're still looking at a significant number of people who complain of dryness and discomfort at the end of the day. We're very keen to be able to get hold of those people for our studies. We're trying to better understand why that happens. You know, why is it that you can take a patient who, when they're not wearing a contact lens, their eye feels perfectly comfortable, you put a contact lens in their eye, and their eyes feel dry, gritty, uncomfortable towards the end of the day? There are so many potential reasons why that could be. Is it the tear film underneath the lens? Is it the tear film over the surface of the lens? Is it the way that they blink? Are there particular inflammatory markers in their tear film that we need to better understand? Because if we can knock those out, then maybe those particular patients would be very comfortable. So if any of your listeners have dryness and discomfort with their contact lenses, we'd be delighted for them to become a participant in our study. We try and understand why they're getting dryness and discomfort, and then they could be enrolled in a study trying to use these new products to try and manage that.
And if you'd like to, again, take part in one of these studies, the number to call, 519-888-4539, or you can learn more at cclr.ca. Contact lenses have come a long, long way over the years, because I used to have problems where if I had my lenses in 8 hours, I just couldn't wait to get them out. Now, I can wear mine all day long, never bother me, yay. So what has changed? I used to have problems where my eye doctor would tell me, your eye's not getting enough oxygen. But now I don't have that problem.
That's right. And we were chatting earlier on. You said just how short-sighted you are. And, you know, the thing now about contact lens materials is that they're about 5 to 6 times more permeable to oxygen than they ever were in the past. So soft contact lenses, which are the lenses that the majority of patients wear, something like 90% of the world's population who wear contact lenses wear soft lenses, they were developed in the late 1960s, early 70s. At that point, the amount of oxygen that got through to your eye was relatively low. In the late 1990s, a particular change came about where contact lenses were developed that contained silicone. Some of your listeners may have heard of the word silicone hydrogels. Silicone particular type of contact lens material that transmits about 5 to 6 times more oxygen, and that is obviously much healthier for your eye, particularly if you have a very thick prescription. So if you know that your spectacles are pretty thick, then that translates into your contact lenses being very thick, and the thicker your contact lens, the less oxygen that gets through to your eye. So these new silicone hydrogel contact lens materials have really revolutionized the contact lens industry.
Well, friends who put my glasses on tell me they can see through time. So that's why I've got the thicker toric lenses. But thank goodness that the technology has come along, because now I can wear them and see well with them, whereas before I couldn't.
Yeah, and that's also worth bearing in mind for your listeners, because I'm sure that there are many of your listeners out there who said, yeah, you know, all these contact lens stuff. I tried contact lenses years ago and they failed. Really, they shouldn't be put off by that, because things have changed incredibly. People who we couldn't even potentially fit 4 or 5 years ago were now being able to very, very successfully fit with brand new materials, brand new designs, things like daily disposables. You know, the 10 years ago, the thought of being able to use a lens for a day and throw it away was just crazy. You know, it was far too expensive. Now it's relatively inexpensive to wear a lens. And the great thing about wearing daily disposables, which happens to be the lens type that I wear, is that, of course, you haven't got any of that faffing around with contact lens solutions. You haven't got your case. It's incredibly fantastic for those people who want to just occasionally be able to wear their lenses. You know, you're going out for dinner. It'd be nice to be able to put something in and not wear my spectacles. Use a daily disposable lens.
Mm-hmm. Even having a monthly disposable, which is what I use now, is so much better than it used to be.
Absolutely. When I first started wearing contact lenses back in 1981, and at that point, you know, you lost a contact lens, you would try forever to try and find that thing, because it cost a fortune. You know, you try and keep it for like 2 years. You'd do anything to look after that contact lens. It was almost like, you know, the lens had been in your family for generations by the time you threw it away, and it was uncomfortable and nasty and thick and horrible. Now, novel and new contact lens materials are just so much better than they ever were before. So people who have failed with lenses before, again, we're very interested in them volunteering for our studies, because those kind of people are particularly of interest to us, because obviously they failed once before, and we're pretty sure, certain that we'll be able to get them in lenses these days.
Now, you said that about 90% of contact lens wearers use soft contact lenses. So why would you still use a hard contact lens?
Great question. Now, that there are certain conditions for which you could not wear any other type of lens except a rigid lens. Now, there are certain eye conditions, one of them being keratoconus. Keratoconus is a condition where your cornea or the clear window on the front of your eye becomes distorted, and the only way to get good vision through that type of distorted cornea is to wear a rigid lens. So it basically bends the light as if your eye was a normal shape again. So there are certain medical conditions for which you have no choice. There are other situations in which people who get dry eye actually get better comfort with a rigid contact lens than they do with a soft lens. And again, we don't understand why. So, you know, that's another area of study for us, is trying to understand why certain lens materials work better in others. But the major reason why people would wear rigid contact lenses is if they have a toric cornea, so if they have astigmatism, which means their eye is shaped more like a football than a soccer ball, they have two different prescriptions along their eye, and often those patients actually get better quality of vision with a rigid lens than they would do with a soft lens, particularly if they have to wear soft toric lens. And again, I'm sure some of your listeners may have heard of the word soft toric lens before. That's a lens that's made to correct astigmatism. Mm-hmm. And again, they're better than they ever used to be. But again, they don't work for all patients. So for some of those patients, we end up having to fit a rigid lens to give them good vision.
Well, there we go. So I have certainly heard of soft toric lenses. I've got them in right now. And thank goodness, or I'd be bumping into things. How did you get involved in research on contact lenses?
Oh, good question. So I'm primarily a practitioner. So I'm an optometrist. I trained in the UK. And at the time, my final year's training was done in a hospital department. And they had some clinical studies going on that I was involved in, working with some of the participants. Loved doing research. When I ended up graduating and working in practice, my wife and I had two very large contact lens practices in central London, in London, England. And we were involved with contact lens companies doing comparisons of new products against old products. We were very interested in doing those contact lens studies. And when an opportunity to move to the Centre for Contact Lens Research at the University of Waterloo, which is the second biggest clinical trial facility of its kind in the world, there is a larger one based in Sydney, Australia, but we're pretty big. We have a team of about 50 people who conduct pure research. And so when an opportunity to become a full-time researcher at the CCLR came up, my wife and I moved over here, and that was 13, 14 years ago.
Wow. And you've been enjoying it ever since?
Yeah, it's been great. The center does incredible work. It's great to work with all of these new products. It's great to work on these studies. And the interesting thing, of course, these days is that from when we moved 14 years ago, the winters are nothing like as brutal as they were in those days. You just don't get the snow you do anymore, although...
Which is good. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
My guest today, Dr. Lyndon Jones, who is the director of the CCLR at the School of Optometry and Vision Science at the University of Waterloo, online at cclr.ca. And you can call them to participate in a study or learn more at 519-888-4539. We will be back with more in just a couple of minutes here on 570 News. On the show today, Dr. Lyndon Jones is my guest. He is the director of the CCLR, the Center for Contact Lens Research, at the School of Optometry and Vision Science at the University of Waterloo. As you listen, if you'd like to learn more, fire up your web browser and go to cclr.ca. When you're in a study like this, it's nice to know that the person, you know, doing the study also wears contact lenses. And you did say earlier that you wear contact lenses. What type do you wear?
So I wear daily disposable lenses. In fact, the type of daily disposable lens I wear is actually one of these super oxygen permeable silicone hydrogel contact lenses. There are a number of different types of options for people to wear contact lenses these days, very, very many more options than there ever used to be. And you can kind of think about the different options of lenses as for soft lens anyway, as dividing really into two families now. We've got the older style hydrogel materials and the newer style silicone hydrogel materials. And the big advantage of the silicone hydrogels is that they transmit about 5 to 6 times more oxygen. So that's a big plus, particularly for people who want to wear their lenses for many hours during the day, or alternatively people who have very thick prescriptions, because that extra oxygen to your eye makes your eye much healthier. The other kind of division really you can think about contact lenses is really in terms of how frequently they're replaced. And so typically the options these days are lenses that are replaced every month, every 2 weeks, or every 1 day. So pretty much these days there's an option for every single person who wants to wear contact lenses out there.
Who's a good candidate for like a daily wear contact lens?
Daily wear as in daily disposable? Or
yes, daily. Sorry, daily disposable.
Yeah. Well, basically people who don't like the hassle of wearing contact lenses. So I'm terrible. I travel a lot to conferences and to meet up with the companies that we work with. And so for me, taking bottles of solutions on airplanes is a nightmare. You know, it's very, very much harder these days, particularly if you don't check luggage. You know, you have to put all the everything in the little bottles and the little bags to go through the screening process. The other beauty about wearing daily disposables is because you're not using solutions, you're not having to worry about a case. One of the major reasons why people get contact lens complications is from their contact lens case. Those contact lens cases need to be cleaned frequently, like every day, and of course people never do that. Mm-hmm. And also they need to be replaced very frequently, which should be every month, and of course people don't do that either. And so they become a source of germs that then the bacteria in those cases actually get transferred to the contact lens, which gets transferred to your eye. So if you look at the numbers of complications that occur, the lowest risk of any contact lens type occurs with daily disposable lenses. So they're really hassle-free, very safe, and really not that much more expensive than lenses that you keep for a longer period of time.
Now, I'm going to talk about me again. There's been a lot of me on the show today, but I wear soft toric lenses.
Right.
I have pretty bad astigmatism. Mine are a monthly lens. Why is it that they're a monthly lens? Is it because they're more expensive to make, or?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So if you look at the cost of daily disposable lenses, they are slightly more expensive than conventional spherical lenses, so that lenses that are monthly, as an example. But when you start getting to the very, very complex optical principles, like, you know, the lenses for presbyopia and the lenses for astigmatism, so toric lenses, then the cost of those in a daily disposable modality starts to incrementally increase. And so you're looking at the lenses really becoming quite expensive. So it becomes a cost issue, and the cost-benefit issue is, for those lenses at the moment, it's still not just there.
So I should probably be better about cleaning out my little contact lens case than I am.
You really probably should. We haven't talked about that, but my guess is you're probably not as good as you could be.
No, I'll admit it, I'm not. See, here's what I learned this week. When your wife was on last week, she said, don't wear your contact lenses when you've got a cold, which I've always done, and now I've learned that I'm probably not looking after my contact lens case as well as I should. So there's a lesson for all of us. I know you get the new little lens case when you buy the solution the next time, but you got to keep it clean. Okay, good. Now, do you ever run studies for non-lens wearers that could be involved where they are fitted with lenses? Or
we do indeed, yes. So we often have a number of studies that come up where we actually require what we call neophyte wearers or people who are new to contact lenses. So those would be people who are spectacle wearers, who are interested in getting into contact lenses, haven't made that jump for either a financial reason or maybe they're a little bit worried about even putting things in their eye. And again, people shouldn't be too worried about putting contact lenses in their eye. We can teach pretty much anybody. I've been qualified now more than 25 years, and I've only ever failed to teach one person to put a contact lens in their eye, and that was a guy, because they're always guys. They are the worst. Men are terrible at being taught how to put contact lenses in their eye. And this guy was just too frightened to put his finger anywhere near his eye, which makes it kind of tough to be able to get a contact lens in your eye.
I went for an appointment at one point. They used something that was new to me. I don't even know what it's called, but it measured something in my eye, and it was sort of like ultrasonic. It came right up to my eye and touched, I guess.
Right.
Maybe you know what I'm talking about. I don't know. But the person who was doing it said, wow, you're a contact lens wearer, aren't you? Because you didn't even flinch.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I'm fine with that. I have no problem touching my eye, but... So how is it that you do get people past that fear? I know so many people have said, I can't wear contacts as I can't touch my eyes.
We have two people who are brilliant at doing that. They've got years and years of experience of allaying people's fears so that they're not worried about touching their eye. They're brilliant. So we, you know, doesn't matter what age it is, we run a number of studies that my wife was, she was talking about the children's studies that we run. We run a number of studies in which we're looking at kids who are 5, 6, 7. You know, you'd think they'd be terrible at putting contact lenses in. They're brilliant. They have no fear at all. And if we can teach them, we can teach pretty much anybody. So really, people who are worried about trying contact lenses for the first time, that's a fairly minimal issue. You get over it pretty quickly.
With a few minutes left in the show, maybe you could just recap some of the current studies that are going on now that people can still sign up for.
Yeah, we're very interested in a number of studies. So we're interested in Asian participants who would like to participate in our Lady Gaga study. So this is a study in which we're looking at how the contact lens affects the physiology of your eye. So that's a study starting in the new year. We're also interested in patients who are over 45 who have problems with close vision. So these presbyopic lenses, we have a number of studies coming up to look at new types of presbyopia. We're very interested in people who have contact lens discomfort. So if you wear contact lenses and you have dryness towards the end of the day, please contact us because we're very interested in trying to understand why you have discomfort and then also using new materials and contact lens solutions to solve that. We have a study in which we're looking at patients who have glaucoma. So if you're if you suffer from glaucoma and put drops in your eye, particularly if you have dryness when using those drops, then we're very interested in trying to use another drop that you'd use in conjunction with your glaucoma drop to make your eyes more comfortable. We're also interested in children studies. So we have a significant number of studies starting up in the new year for young children. So non-contact lens wearers who are spectacle wearers, we're interested in putting them into contact lenses to try and look at how fast their prescription progresses over a period of time. And we're also interested in people who have dry eye. So if you're a non-contact lens wearer and you have symptoms of dry eye, then again, we have a number of studies that we're looking to recruit for to try looking at new dry eye therapies.
All very exciting. And it's nice to know that you're doing the study on children now, because I think a lot of people think that young children can't wear contact lenses. Yeah. And there are still lenses for people who are over 50. So what is the age range these days for contact lens wearers?
That's a great question. I mean, so there are some babies who wear contact lenses. My youngest patient at the university is 8 months old. She was born with a cataract. That cataract was taken out, and the only way to be able to optically correct someone of that age is to use a contact lens. So my youngest patient is months old. The oldest current patient that I see in the clinic is 92. So there really isn't... There are very, very few people these days who cannot wear contact lenses, no matter what your prescription is, no matter what your age is, no matter what you've got wrong with your eye. Pretty much everyone can wear contact lenses these days. And that's very different from what it was, say, even 5 years ago. We have a tremendous variety of contact lenses now that work very well for pretty much everybody.
That's great news. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
I learned a lot, so I guess a lot of people learned a lot. Dr. Lyndon Jones is my guest today, director of the CCLR at the School of Optometry and Vision Science at the University of Waterloo. Look them up online at cclr.ca to learn more, and I urge you to call them and become part of one of their studies, 519-888-4539. That's 888-4539. And I want to thank you for listening to another edition of Ask the Experts here on 570 News.